Hi, welcome to China Unscripted. I'm Chris Chappell.
I'm Shelley Zhang.
And I'm Matt Kanesta.
And today we are coming from Taipei, Taiwan, our last day after this amazing trip covering the elections here. Unfortunately, we don't have any of our Path of Cha tea with us, so we'll just have to do this slightly uncaffeinated. So yeah, we're wrapping up, like, what was it, 10 days in Taiwan, something like that?
We've always lived in Taiwan.
We've always lived in Taiwan. So what was your favorite memory of this trip? Open to the floor.
Matthew?
My favorite memory was watching the vote counting on election day, because you can go to the local voting areas where they have the booths, and they close the polls at 4. And then after that, they actually count the paper ballots by hand, and they hold up each one and they read it, and it'll be like, you know, Tsai Ing-wen yi piao, like one vote for Tsai Ing-wen, or Han Kuo-yu yi piao, and the one vote for Han Kuo-yu. And they say it, and then the public can stand there and watch and monitor it to make sure that everything's being counted accurately.
They actually hold it up so that you can see where the stamp is on the ballot, so you can see that it was a vote for whoever they said it was.
Yeah, so it kind of has a public accountability mechanism to the vote tallying, and I think that's something we don't have in the U.S. I think that's a really nice thing about the way they do their elections here.
Yeah, it kind of allows people to be a little more involved in the process.
This didn't happen at the polling stations we went to, but I've seen video of other ones where there was a mistake made. So, like, people would just immediately kind of call it out, and then it would be changed right there. So, you had a sense that people were watching it very seriously.
Yeah.
And I think also, I don't know about you guys, but I was getting kind of moved when we were watching that. Like, I felt almost like a little choked up.
Yeah, I also had feels.
And I was talking about this to my sister, and we were, because I was live tweeting this, and then she was like, I started to get a little choked up when I was reading your tweets about this. And we were discussing about how, you know, it's kind of this like ritual that's involved with democracy, but it's not a partisan thing. Like, it's not campaigning, it's not kind of like the spin cycle or anything like that. It's a ritual that people are doing that almost like honors and respects democracy and is like witnessing the process of the people's voices, right? And you had the sense that like really, like they're counting every vote. Like they lift every vote out of the box, show it, put the mark on the, you know, tally, and they, after they take all the votes out of the ballots, they show everybody the empty ballot box. And I think this historically has also a lot to do with the fact that there was a lot of corruption previously in Taiwan, and there are issues with like ballot stuffing and things like that.
I mean, many of the people here still remember a time when Taiwan was ruled by martial law. So I think democracy really means something to them, which is why voter turnout is like over 70%.
Yeah, I mean, martial law only ended in like 1987. So it was 38 years of martial law after the KMT came from fleeing the communists from mainland China. So from 1949 to 1987, it was martial law, and they didn't have their first presidential elections until 1996.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice to see people really engaged in democracy in a way that you don't really see too often in the United States, I guess. I mean, voter turnout is definitely not what it is in the U.S.
No, I think the voter turnout this time was 74%, which is higher than last election was 4 years ago, was 66%.
Yeah. Well, there's actually a lot of obstacles to, especially young people, voting. And a lot of them still came out and voted. Shelley, why don't you talk about that?
Well, Taiwan has a hukou, a household registration system. So you have to go to where your household is registered to vote. And there's no absentee ballots. You can change your household registration to where you're currently living, but it can be hard to do that if you're just renting your apartment, because you have to get the owner of the apartment to agree. Like, there's just some bureaucratic, the hoops you have to jump through that makes it difficult. So a lot of people, young people, their house of registration is still where they grew up. So people had to travel back to a long ways. And if you are abroad and you want to vote, you can't, there's no mechanism for like an absentee ballot. So you have to, yeah. So there are about twice as many people this election than last election who registered to fly back to Taiwan to cast their vote.
Yeah, it was amazing. Like we met a bunch of people who said they did that, mostly young people.
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people were, you know, also even coming back from mainland China or Hong Kong, which is closer, but there were some people who came from America to cast their vote. And that's very, you know, I mean, they were very concerned about what was going to be happening.
I like thinking of it as casting a vote like casting a spell. The ancient rites of democracy enacted.
I don't know why I'm thinking of Magic the Gathering suddenly.
Oh, well. Well, Shelley, what...
Wait, did you play Magic the Gathering when you were a kid?
No.
Shelley's a nerd.
Yeah, I mean, I also totally didn't play...
I didn't have the money to buy those
cards. I did have my own deck of Magic cards.
Yeah? Do you still have it?
No, I don't think so.
Too bad. So, Shelley, what was your favorite memory? That was Matt's favorite memory. What was your favorite memory?
And don't hijack my memory.
That's true.
I feel like we all have the same favorite memory.
No, my favorite memory is the daily adrenaline rush of trying to dodge scooters on the street. I felt so alive.
Yeah, that is very different. I don't know, the vote counting also made a big impression on me.
You're hijacking Matt's favorite memory.
I think something about coming here and witnessing the whole process leading up to the elections.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you mean like how people could like hold up their cards and like is like Tsai Ing-wen EPL, like that's your favorite memory, that part of it?
Stop hijacking my memories! Get out of my head! All right, here's what. Let me switch my favorite memory, and then you can have that one.
Is it possible for two people to share a favorite memory?
Is it possible, Matt? Is it okay with you?
No, it's not. I'm going to switch my favorite memory. All right, here's what. You can have the voting one. Let me switch to a different favorite.
My favorite memory is being here with you guys.
Aww. That's very sweet, especially since my favorite memory is not being here with you guys.
My favorite memory?
No. Sorry. That is not my favorite memory. It's a memory I have, but it's not my favorite memory.
Okay. All right, well, Shelley is scrolling through pictures trying to remember her memories. So while she's doing that, Matt, what was your least favorite memory?
My least favorite memory.
Oh, Shelley, since she got to the pictures of cats she's been taking.
Maybe it's my favorite memory is cats. I don't know. I liked...
Oh, yeah, the one guy who had democracy shaved into his haircut.
Right?
That was awesome.
That was great.
For many of the memories that are our favorites that we've forgotten, you can check out the China Uncensored Instagram or Twitter, Facebook, and Shelley's Twitter, at Shell Zhang. There's lots of good stuff there.
I guess this is a problem with me. I have a problem choosing favorites. Because I feel like every day was interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. One of my actual favorite memories, so you can have the voting one, was going to the Hangguoyu rally.
Because Matt is a big KMT supporter.
Well, what was interesting about that is, not from a partisan perspective, but just from the perspective of how passionate people were. And it was like a lot of older people as well. And they were so energetic and so passionate.
You mean it was like all older people?
Yeah, it was like mostly 40 plus people. And the oldest guy we met was in his 90s, who was there like at this KMT rally supporting Hong Kong Yu. But the supporting Hong Kong Yu part is not the important part of this. The important part is that it represented this sort of feeling of democracy that everyone of all ages was participating, and they were so passionate. And when we were recording the live broadcast from the KMT rally, there were all these people that would come up and like waved their flags, and they were like, you know, they kept gathering behind me as I was filming and behind you guys, and that one guy like was waving his flags behind you, Chris.
And giving Chris bunny ears, that guy?
Yeah, but just like that passion I thought was really great.
I will never forget seeing a giant ROC flag like barreling down the crowd toward us and then like having to duck under it.
Oh yeah, the thing was at least like 50 feet long. It's just like being passed like it was crowd surfing.
Crowd surfing a flag.
It was.
That basically is what it was. And yeah, like we were packed in with the crowds. There was no avoiding it.
Yeah.
That was fun. And there was like that sort of degree of energy and fun at the Hangul-U rally, the KMT guy, that wasn't so much there for the next day for the Tsai Ing-wen DPP rally.
I mean, like I said, it looked like the KMT rally people were just like hardcore like football fans or something going to a rally. And then the DPP one looked like ordinary people going to event after work.
Yeah, yeah. But at both rallies, there were dogs dressed up supporting their favorite parties.
And, you know, kids chanting. And, oh, one thing that the DPP rally had that the... Like, you could see it was very different because, like, the KMT rally, like, they used the ROC flag so much everywhere. But there weren't really any ROC flags at the DPP rally.
Another difference was there were no Hong Kong protesters at the KMT rally.
Yeah.
Yeah, there were a lot of Hong Kong protesters at the DPP rally, and you could see the black support Hong Kong flags all over that. Yeah, yeah, it was pretty interesting.
Well, maybe since Shelley doesn't have a memory of the past times, we can use this to jump and talk about like... sort of the Hong Kong presence here.
Sure.
One thing that jumps into mind is when we went to interviewed Carrie Gershannock at, what was that university?
NCCU.
That they had, the students there had created their own Lenin Wall in support of Hong Kong protesters.
Oh, yeah.
It was pretty huge. And it was pretty interesting because they had all of the, you had your classic Lenin Wall sticky notes, but there were posters, you know, signs that like a giant like printed banner that was like fight for freedom, stand with Hong Kong, that had this like amazing like art of all of the like the protests. Like you have people in masks, mm-hmm. people in like waving the US flag with umbrellas, with hard hats, with
I love when we describe visual things on the podcast.
Like, I see a guy wearing, like, one of those, like, V for Vendetta Guy Fawkes masks. And, like, people have made also kind of pixelated art.
Of Pepe or Winnie the Pooh wearing a Mao cap.
Like, no, he's in a full mouse, like, not just a cap, but,
looks
like...
a little...
Wait, so when Winnie the Pooh wears a Mao suit, does he also wear Mao pants?
Oh, interesting.
That's a good question.
That is a good question. Yeah, you can't
see. Oh, the image is cut off, so you can't see below the waist.
It's not cut off. They just didn't make... He has no lower body.
Yes, he has no lower body. So yeah, like, I think it would look weird if he were wearing pants. Yeah. But it also would look weird if he weren't wearing pants.
Just anyone listening, check out our social medias for these actual images.
I like how somebody has posted, like, a still, like... screenshot of the South Park episode
where Randy Marsh
is strangling Winnie the Pooh. So there's like there's the oh no.
If there are weird sounds coming through this podcast, I should just let you know we're staying in a friend's apartment, and Taiwanese homes are not really insulated from the outside, so. You know, when we got here, we were like, you know, we're from New York, and we're kind of laughing at people wearing heavy coats in, like, 60-degree weather. And then we realized, like, well, when you live in an apartment that has no heating and no insulation, it does get pretty cold.
And also pretty loud. I mean, as a New Yorker, I'm very used to loud noises while trying to sleep, but this was even worse. And, like, oh, my gosh, what are we listening to? It's like
somebody's drilling.
Drilling, yeah.
Someone's drilling. Next door.
And you know what else? Like at 6 in the morning, there's like these trucks that come by blaring on loudspeakers, like different, are they like advertisements or?
Well, definitely before the election, there were some election vans.
Yeah, they drive by, the election vans drive by with speakers blaring election, whatever they're saying from standing atop the truck. But then also there's commercial ones doing their own like blaring from speakers.
I thought I heard a religious one this morning, but I
can't. Oh, that's what it was. It was a religious one.
Is it? I don't know. I heard that guy every day. But yeah, you hear the scooters, you hear people starting up their food stalls and washing
stuff. The first morning we woke up, after being incredibly jet-lagged, there was somebody playing Christmas music.
There are still Christmas decorations up. It's like, what day is it? Not July.
January 16th.
It's January 16th, and there are still Christmas decorations up.
Not that many, but we did like hear like Celine Dion singing Christmas music. It was just... It's been an interesting trip. Oh, I just realized that there's an actual Pepe doll hanging on the Lennon wall.
Yes, so, this thing nobody can see.
No, I mean, like, it is kind of cute that, like, you see all these, like, Hong Kong jokes and, like, images or whatever.
Hong Kong definitely had a presence
in Taiwan,
here.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, at the rallies, at the DPP rally, we talked to some... Hong Kong protesters who were there, but also on the day of the election, we interviewed some Taiwanese people, and a lot of them had the same message of like, you know, we were asking them why they're out voting, and a lot of it was, you know, people are afraid that Taiwan will become the next Hong Kong.
And we were actually in a district that leans towards the KMT, the more pro-China party, and. Last election, the local, like, legislative representative was from the KMT, and the DPP didn't even run a candidate. So it was like a match between KMT and another more pro-China, smaller, like, third party. And this time, the DPP candidate won.
Yeah. So, I think China was definitely a big concern during these elections, and to some extent, the Hong Kong protests definitely very like visualized in people's mind what is at stake. Like Hong Kong now is basically, if you look at it, it's like a prison. They put like fencing around skyways. There's the airport looks like a war zone. Like Hong Kong has become a police state, basically, and nobody wants to see that in Taiwan. Well, except for the Communist Party. They would love to see a police state come to Taiwan.
No, Chris, it's one country, two systems. Taiwan could keep all of their democratic freedoms, including electing their regional leader.
Oh, yeah, when Tsai won, first of all, 60 countries congratulated her, which is kind of ironic since there's only 14 countries that have official diplomatic recognition of Taiwan. And obviously the Chinese Communist Party threw a little hissy fit about...
There was gnashing of teeth.
Teeth were gnashed to the nub. And but then in Chinese state-run media, I'm amazed they covered the election at all, but how did Xinhua phrase it, Shelley?
I mean, they couldn't completely ignore it, but they basically... There was like an official press statement about how the... Taiwan leadership,
the regional leadership election
was, you know, like the reason that Tsai Ing-wen won the Taiwan local regional leadership election was because of foreign interference. Definitely name dropped the U.S. Talked about how like Tsai and her party were greedy and evil and all this stuff. Yeah.
They've caught us. We're the black hands behind Tsai Ing-wen's victory.
Meanwhile, the Chinese Communist Party has been buying up Taiwanese media and having them broadcast anti-Tsai propaganda. But no, it's the U.S.
I mean, Taiwan has a complicated... Like, they have so many different media.
There's and like then, 200 TV stations, I heard.
So then you have, like, everybody kind of knows that, like, this media is more, like, pro-KMT. This media, or, like, blue, yeah. They call it. Like, pro... The more, like, sympathetic to... China parties, they call blue parties, and like more pro like Taiwanese sovereignty or independence, they call them green. So like you'll be like, okay, this media is like a blue media or this media is a green media, like everybody knows.
And some are like just flat out red.
But yeah, that's a new thing that they people have been calling like for getting rid of the red media in Taiwan. Like one of the most notorious ones is like the media controlled by the Want Want group. So they also, Want Want group isn't just media, but like they have control of several big newspapers and stuff like that. And everybody knows that they're red media.
They just want to take away Taiwan's democracy.
Shelley, have you thought of what your favorite memory was yet? Nope. Okay. Moving on.
Are we going to talk about the fan meetup?
Oh, yeah. The fan meetup was super duper cool. That could be your favorite memory.
That could.
Or a memory that you really enjoy.
I did really enjoy that memory.
Yeah.
If you don't call it my favorite, then I feel less pressure.
Okay. So a memory that you liked.
I definitely really always love meeting people at the fan meetups.
And there were people who have been at all of our other Taiwan fan meetups who came. It was good seeing those old faces.
But. And we should have gotten a larger room for our fan meetup.
So. Here comes the drilling.
What is that? Why?
Why does it sound like it's coming from like right next door?
It could be, or it could be coming from downstairs. I mean,
there's no insulation.
Yeah, there's no way to edit that out. Anyway, go on, Shelley.
Fan meetup. Didn't get a big enough room.
Oh, yeah, so we should have gotten a bigger room for the fan meetup.
We're going to need a bigger room.
But, so sorry to anybody who came and was kind of squeezed in the very back or couldn't quite make it into the room.
I mean, you'd think they'd have finished drilling it. How long does it take to drill something? You drill it and it's drilled.
Oh, you know what that is? There's like some weird pizza place that's being built. Just down the street. It's like Inch's Pizza or something. It's just like a weird...
pizza by the inch.
You know, pizza in Taiwan, it was like... We did see that one pizza at the night market, right?
The little mini pizza?
Yeah, didn't that look appetizing, guys?
Well, this feels like it's going to what my worst memory was.
Okay, anyway, let's keep going about the fan meetup. We should have gotten a larger room at the fan meetup, but what I also really enjoyed was, like, people came for other people. Like, remember two teenage girls who are studying in Taiwan for the year came because one of them has a mom in Florida who's a big fan of the show, and it was her mom's birthday.
And so she came to, like, get a picture and video as a surprise to her mother, and then her friend came along to support her friend. I don't think they, like, actually knew anything, like, were fans of the show.
No, definitely, the friend was not. We were not cool enough for them, but it was really sweet for them to come.
They're like in high school.
To come for the one girl's mom, and so we actually FaceTimed with her mom.
Yeah, that was cool. Technology. She was very excited.
There was also somebody who came from Singapore because her cousin in Singapore came because her cousin in Singapore was a fan of the show.
Oh, yeah.
And there was a guy who flew in from Japan for the fan meetup.
Yes, a South Korean fan who flew in from Okinawa. So, yeah.
Yeah, it was an awesome time. And lots of really smart questions. One of the fans gave us some haka tea, which is pretty cool. Big thanks to him.
Oh, yeah, the bookstore was awesome, too. It was called To'at Culture. I'm probably mispronouncing that. Yeah. But the reason that we picked that is because they are like a subversive bookstore. And on the outside, they had like a stand with Hong Kong sign taped up, and they sold a bunch of subversive anti-Chinese Communist Party books. And so it seemed like a good partner to use. Although I do regret getting a room that was designed for only 50 people, because people were like packed in the back and out in the hallway and couldn't get in because it was too crowded. So sorry about that.
So just to complete my worst memory from the trip, since we kind of started that, boba tea pizza.
That's worse than the stinky tofu, because you told me you'd rather eat boba tea pizza than stinky tofu.
I would rather eat boba tea pizza than stinky tofu. However, stinky tofu, I know what to expect. It doesn't try to be anything other than what it is. It's stinky tofu. You know what to expect. But the bubble tea pizza. Domino's in Taiwan has a boba tea pizza. It's basically, if you've had a milk tea, it's a cheese pizza, no tomato sauce, but then it's got the bubbles.
The tapioca balls,
and like a sweet, coyly sweet syrup drizzled all over the top of the pizza. And it was Shelley's idea. We had to eat it because it was only for a limited time only.
I mean, it's just one of those things that's like, it's a thing.
Just because it's one of those things, Shelley, doesn't mean we have to do it.
Sure, it does.
Well, you wanted to film us doing it, so you were in Shelley's camp.
Whoa, no, Chris, no. Shelley wanted the boba pizza, and Shelley wanted to do a live broadcast while eating the boba tea pizza. My part was simply setting up the equipment and running it.
It was my brainchild.
It was totally Shelley's brainchild. You get all the credit, Shelley.
Look, Matt.
Like, it was for, because, like, you know, our previous live election night had, the quality was so terrible. We could barely get, like, cell reception for internet.
Each frame had 10 pixels. It was, like, it was really bad.
Well, it was, Matt, like, 2005 YouTube. So, as an apology to our fans, I thought we could eat this pizza and answer their election
questions. And punish ourselves, yeah.
But Matt, you can't shirk off responsibility. Like, evil happens when good men do nothing.
You also went along with this, then.
Yeah, she's right.
Well, no, in this scenario, I'm like the victim who was forced by your cunning and Matt's inaction. So, that's why it was my worst memory of Taiwan.
This is what splits the China and Censor team up. we can go through a month of being in Hong Kong.
Tear gas.
We can go through, you know, a 54-hour boat ride to the South China Sea. But the boba pizza is what finally tears us apart.
That's where we draw the line.
Well, I'm sorry, guys. This is going to be the last episode of the China Unscripted podcast and China Uncensored and America Uncovered. Everything is done because of this boba pizza that Shelley said we had to eat.
Just so you know, this is actually kind of the zeitgeist right now because boba pizza is currently tearing up Hong Kong and the Taiwan Twitter.
Oh, yeah. Oh, great. Everything happening in Hong Kong, this is just one other thing they need.
Well, because the boba pizza has just made it to Hong Kong.
Yeah. Gosh, that's the ultimate weapon to use against the people of Hong Kong.
It's really not that bad. I mean, I don't know that I would eat it again, but like it wasn't terrible.
I mean, it really wasn't, and like honestly,
the texture of the bubbles was good.
Like, that is true.
So what's Shelley, what's the name that Taiwanese people have a name for that specific squishy texture?
Q,
like the letter Q.
Like the letter Q, yeah.
No relation to QAnon.
Or is there?
Bum bum bum.
Yeah, but they call things that have that kind of like springy, chewy texture, but it's kind of still soft, Q. So like you'll see, like when we're walking through the night market, a lot of foods were advertising themselves as like something Q or like QQ. So that was a selling point for the pizza. My biggest concern about the pizza was the interplay between the cheese and the boba. Like, I thought that might be kind of disgusting because it's just, like, mozzarella.
Which is hypocritical, Shelley, because when you buy bubble tea at, like, Yifang, you get the cheese tea.
That's not hypocritical. That's a totally different kind of cheese.
It's a different kind of cheese, Matt.
It's basically, like a whipped cheese, like whipped cream or cream cheese type of, like, a... It almost is like a mascarpone type of cheese versus like a mozzarella cheese that you put on pizza.
It's a different kind of cheese, Matt.
All right, I concede the point.
What was your worst memory? every live broadcast, is my guess.
every live. No, my worst memory was being so frustrated while we were filming the election night broadcast because they had told us we were going to get Wi-Fi, and then not only did we not get Wi-Fi, but apparently the whole press corps who was there wasn't able to access the Wi-Fi. And so you then had like 10,000 people all using their cell phones, and I had one bar of reception. And like I hate that because I feel like once you go live, you can't really stop a live broadcast. You can't just arbitrarily stop and start it. So I felt like we were doing a disservice to the fans. And then I felt like that for the entire, you know, time we were doing that broadcast. Just like very upset at myself and the whole situation for putting all our fans in that situation.
And now we're making a podcast with obnoxious drilling sounds.
Honestly, like, this is not as bad as that. Because at least there's a continuous audio feed.
Oh, true.
Fair point.
As one fan described our live broadcast, it was like image of Chris and Shelley, then static, then Chris and Shelley teleport.
I think just Chris was teleporting, but yes.
Another crazy thing that happened was like all of the weird media attention we got.
Oh, yeah. That started with the first day. Like, we landed at like 6 in the morning, and then the first thing we did was go to a press conference, because that was what you want to do when you land with
one of the candidates for DPP, legislative candidate Enoch Wu, was having a international press conference that afternoon, and people convinced us to go.
It was an interesting press conference, and he's very articulate. But that's not the thing that people reported on at the press conference.
Well, some people did talk. There was the local, like, public broadcasting station in Taipei, or Taiwan, I think it's called. Oh, my gosh.
So the thing people want to hear about is how they talk to us.
Yeah. So they did the public broadcasting station equivalent did this whole news story about why foreigners care or foreign media care about the Taiwan election. And so they interviewed Chris.
Yeah, like the thing was done and we were on the sidewalk and a fan like walked by and like started talking to me. And so then like these other medias saw like someone
wanting to take photos with you and stuff like that. Yeah.
Hey, that guy in a suit must be famous.
Also, you know, being in a suit, you did stand out.
Yeah. And so then suddenly I get a microphone shoved in my face and then like I'm being quoted on Taiwanese media about the Taiwan election.
Yeah, there were like at least three different media that interviewed you.
Yeah.
I mean, they also interviewed other reporters, mm-hmm. like the other Western reporters. And there were, in the PBS equivalent video, there were many shots of Matt as a representative of...
I represent the foreign.
Foreign media.
Oh, dust.
And there was like one shot of me writing in my notebook, like taking notes in my notebook in English.
Oh yeah, that was great.
But they didn't show your face because your face doesn't represent
foreign. No, it was just like a close-up shot of my notebook and my hands.
Did that feel kind of invasive?
It was weird. I was like, okay, you can literally read what I'm writing, but...
I'm glad you were writing good things.
I wasn't like, this press conference sucks. It is
all
so boring.
All work and no play make Shelley.
Yes, there we go. I'm plotting to make Chris eat boba pizza.
Oh, if I had only seen the signs.
But it was. I mean, I do kind of feel sympathetic because it's hard to take footage of anything interesting at a press conference. You know.
Well, also, it showed me just how Taiwan. It's losing diplomatic allies. It's been a trend for decades.
They've lost 7 within the last. Yeah. Couple years.
They just really want some international recognition. to like be treated as a country, which it is a country.
But yeah, so like, you know, foreigners coming that care about the Taiwanese election was a big deal. Yeah. I didn't quite realize at the time how big a deal that would be.
So what you're saying is we're a big deal.
We became a big deal in Tainan.
But, that wasn't the last media mention.
We got crazy media attention.
So we were interviewing Wang Tingyu. He's a legislator. He's also the head of the legislators' Foreign Affairs and National Defense Committee. And so we interviewed him about like some disinformation campaign and stuff. But anyways, after the interview, like it was lunchtime, and he was like, "No, don't go to just any old restaurant. I'll get you to this really famous Tainan beef hot pot place."
It is. It's like called like Taiwan. It's the name is like Ayu beef in Tainan, and it is famous. Like there were legitimately like photos of like past presidents and stuff.
Yeah.
Up on the wall.
But so yeah, great quality thing. But was it you, Matt, who said it?
Yeah, I said something like, you know, Tainan beef hot pot is so good that President Trump should establish closer relations with Taiwan.
Yes, that like the hot pot was the reason that Trump should support Taiwan.
Yes.
And I think everybody there understood that you were joking. And like, you know, the whole table laughed.
It was definitely a joke.
And everybody thought it was like a lot of fun. And then...
But like all funny jokes, it contained a kernel of truth.
Which was what?
That A, the hot pot was really good. And B, that, you know, the U.S. really should support Taiwan more.
Because of the hot pot.
Well, no, the causation was not necessarily true, but the rest of it was.
Okay, so maybe Wang Dingyu's staffers picked up on that kernel of truth, because then they posted to their Facebook page the next day, like this, like, it was like, oh, here's a funny little story that actually happened. Like, these reporters from New York and Washington, D.C. came to Tainan, and then they came and ate at our famous, you know, Ayu beef hot pot place, and one of them said, "This is so good that this is why Trump should protect Taiwan." And then the Facebook post started to go viral, and the Liberty Times, which is a newspaper, picked up the story, and then a TV station, SETTV, also picked up the story, and then they had, like, they were talking about, they showed the screenshots of Wang Dingyu's Facebook page, they showed a screenshot from our China Uncensored Instagram page, and then they interviewed Wang Dingyu, and he was like recounting, he was not there, but he's like recounting the story about how these reporters from America came, and they came and they had the beef hot pot, and it was so good that Trump should protect Taiwan because of the beef hot pot. And then they interviewed the owner of the beef hot pot restaurant, and there was an extended section where they like taught, like they did like this, here's how you're supposed to cook the beef in the beef hot, like it just was a total. And then they were like, oh well, you know, maybe saying that Trump should protect, you know, Taiwan because of the hot pot was a little bit of an exaggeration,
but not much,
but you know, it was just it was kind of like, I was like, yeah, this got taken maybe out of context.
I was almost a little afraid that he would get in trouble somehow.
Who?
Like it would become a scandal.
For Wang Dingyu?
Yeah.
That he introduced foreigners to beef hot pot?
Or something. I don't know. Taiwanese politics is a bit beyond me.
It was all of because of Matt's witty quip.
That's true. I occasionally pull out a gem.
Pull out a gem from your butt.
Ugh. No, Chris.
Oh, another crazy thing we did. We basically interviewed the Joe Rogan of Taiwan.
Yeah, this guy, his name is Chen Zhihan, but people in Taiwan call him Guanzhang, which means like manager, kind of, because he owns a series of gyms named after Genghis Khan. And he's like this like former MMA fighter. He's a former, like in his youth, he briefly was a gangster and he had a pretty interesting life. And then he, you know, became like this fitness guy and started live streaming like fitness tips and stuff on YouTube. But then he started becoming like a political YouTuber, basically. Like he has a talk show where he interviews politicians and he has live streams every night, his, you know, political commentary and stuff like that. So he is in a way really very similar to Joe Rogan.
Yeah. Well, I think the thing that got him was, you know, he had a lot of mainland Chinese followers, but then they started like saying things like, you know, Taiwan's not a country, just kind of stuff like that. And he knows how to curse pretty fluently.
He was also in the military before. I mean, everybody kind of.
And he was a gangster. He was in a triad.
So he also was at the beginning of January of 2019. Xi Jinping made this speech about Taiwan, where mm-hmm. he was talking about how Taiwan and China need to be unified. Like, that's non-negotiable, and, like, you know, offered one country, two systems as a way for that to happen. And a lot of people in Taiwan had a very negative reaction to the speech, including Guanzhang. So that's, like, really what kicked him off into, like, suddenly becoming, like, a political guy, because he was like, yeah, I realize that politics isn't everything, so there's no real way to avoid it.
Yeah.
And he actually, with Huang Guochan, a politician from the New Power Party, who we also interviewed on this trip, over the summer, they both led a anti-red media march, which was like a big protest against the media that had been like infiltrated or co-opted by the Chinese Communist Party. And 300,000 people came.
That's a lot of people.
Yeah, so it was like a big deal. He was an interesting guy, I would say.
Yeah, gigantic arms.
Just pretty large in general. And when you walk into his studio, like, everything is branded, and he has so much merch, right? Yeah. Like,
yeah, his own brand of noodles.
It's like Notorious brand something. He gave us some of his, like, trail mix, I guess it is. It's like a honey-coated nut mix.
We have not tried this nut mix.
Oh, Chris and I did.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it was pretty great.
Yeah, okay. It was good, yeah. It was legit.
Okay. Yeah, so do you think we'll ever have our own branded nut mix?
I don't know.
I want to start an uncensored product line. I think it'd do very well.
That might get real odd real quickly. What would you start off with?
Well, you know, the basics, uncensored t-shirts, uncensored mugs. You can get into an entire clothing line, uncensored. Well, we can do like the honey roasted peanuts, uncensored nuts.
I was waiting for that. I was waiting for it to get there.
Yeah.
It could be like the Supreme shirts, but uncensored.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's many things we can do with this uncensored branding.
Yeah. But I mean, so what's the reason that Guanzhang actually has his own product lines?
Because he's a savvy businessman.
No.
Yeah, it's that, but also
Matt
because,
set you up to tell it so you could say the interesting
but
point.
But I'm going to say it because you won't say it, which is that he has trouble getting sponsorship because of his anti-red media stance and his anti-Chinese Communist Party stance. And so it's funny because I can completely relate to that. And like, while you do see sponsors on our shows, like here we have Path of Cha, mm-hmm. China Uncensored, we have Surfshark VPN, but and also Mova Globes, but there are very few companies. Like, those represent, you know, three companies out of like 50 or 100 that we could have if we were not anti-Chinese Communist Party. So it just becomes like very difficult, and there's all these barriers to getting sponsorship. And so, you know, it's why really the smart move is to go pro Chinese Communist Party. Then you get all the money.
Well, I think you maybe the point you're trying to make is that he said in our interview that one reason he wanted to have his own product lines is that he wanted to show the people of Taiwan that it's possible to be make money and to be a successful business person without having to sell out to the CCP.
Exactly.
I think he had a pretty intelligent kind of analysis of how the CCP uses economic pressure on especially older Taiwanese people. And so there's this general feeling that you have to bow to the CCP pressure. You can't say anything that would anger the CCP, or it, like, you can't make any money, you can't make a living. Like, that's, you know, for people who have lived through a lot of political instability, societal instability, like the whole, and this was true for my parents too, like the whole, like the first thing they want is for their kids to have like stable jobs, right? You want your kids to have stability and prosperity. So using that as a threat to people,
it like works really well.
It works so well. So his whole thing was that he was like, I don't believe that that's true. Like, I think, you know, he also had a take that was like the biggest thing that the U.S. can do to support Taiwan is to support Taiwan economically, sign trade agreements, do business with us. So his thing was, I want to show Taiwanese people that I can be a successful business person and still speak out against the CCP, which I thought was pretty cool.
That is pretty cool.
Well, maybe as we start to wrap up this podcast, do we want to talk about what we think might happen next for kind of this global movement of like Hong Kong becoming aware about the CCP, Taiwan, the US, Australia, hopefully South Korea soon. Yeah, what's next, do you guys think?
Well, I think this was definitely the second major blow to the CCP in the last, like, 3 months. First, the Hong Kong local elections, where overwhelmingly they voted in the pro-democracy candidates for, like, their local district councils. And then this is the second time where basically the people of Taiwan, despite all of their domestic political differences, they were saying in this election, electing Tsai Ing-wen with a bigger mandate than her last election. And she received the most votes that a Taiwanese presidential candidate has ever received. Plus, the party, the DPP, retained their majority in their legislature, which didn't look necessarily like it was going to happen at all. So it was a pretty loud, like, okay, we don't want this. So.
Right. And what it means is that because she controls the executive branch and the congressional branch of government, that, like, she and her party have a strong mandate from the people to stand up to the Chinese Communist Party. So given that she won by so much, it's much easier now for her to do things that are going to, I could say, protect Taiwan's sovereignty at the expense of what Beijing wants. And she has the power to do that now. And so this might be an opportunity from the U.S.'s perspective to further our closening of ties with Taiwan, because we can do that with Tsai Ing-wen now that she feels like she's going to have the support of her people.
I think you're already starting to see her. She did a bit interview with the BBC after she won the election and said that, you know, China needs to respect Taiwan.
Boom!
You know, that's one of the things that usually everybody's like tiptoeing around what the CCP wants. And she's like, no, the CCP has to respect us. You know, we are an independent country. We don't need to declare independence because we are independent. That's kind of the current government's line about it. But, you know, just reiterating that after her election, saying that China needs to respect Taiwan. And then she's like, you know, we're preserving the status quo. We're not declaring independence. And I think that's us being nice to China.
And China has 4 more years of that to deal with.
Yes.
So, yeah, I think it'll be very interesting to see what happens over... I think 2020 will be an eventful year.
Yeah.
A lot of things will change.
I think that, you know, it's important for the Taiwanese people not to get too complacent about it. Because, of course, like, people who are very anxious about this election from the Chinese Communist Party infiltration or, like, trying to take over Taiwan standpoint, like, this is, like, a breath of relief, right? That Taiwan and not, like, a president who was going to try to get closer ties with the Chinese Communist Party. But at the same time, that doesn't mean certain things are going away, right? Like, this infiltration of the red media that we've been talking about, that's not going anywhere. The, like, disinformation campaign that they've been doing on social media and stuff like that, that's not going anywhere either. How they're trying to influence... When we interviewed Carrie Grishanek, who is a professor here in Taiwan now, but he was talking about the whole idea of the political warfare, right? And one of the things he was mentioning also is how all this stuff fits into the Chinese Communist Party's political warfare model, and things like even taking over the academics at, you know, Taiwanese universities. Like, that's not going to go anywhere either. It's not like they're going to stop trying to influence Taiwanese politics and society.
No, they're not. But what's amazing is that the overwhelming election results show that despite their massive influence push, it didn't work. But I think that's because people in Taiwan were more actively aware of it, and there were groups that were, you know, trying to analyze this fake news. Like in Taiwan, the fake news is actually Chinese Communist Party pushing false narratives. I think it'll be harder in a place like the U.S. or Australia to identify when the interference is coming from the Chinese Communist Party, because Americans are not so keyed into that. Like in Taiwan, the two political parties aren't based on the left-right spectrum that we have in the U.S. They're based on, you know, being more sovereign or closer ties with Beijing. But in the U.S., like, how much is China a part of the election? I mean, maybe we'll see in 2020 that it does become part of the election. But I think in general, it's much harder to be aware of the influence when you're not. It's just not something that people are paying attention to. And I think that a lot of the U.S. mainstream media have done a pretty lousy job of reporting on this sort of thing. It might be partly because they have sponsors that have connections to China, or partly because they have a pre-existing narrative that they want to follow, or they may just generally be unaware of it, or they don't think viewers will be interested. But whatever the reasons are, I think that American media needs to really step it up, and that'll help prevent Chinese Communist Party interference in our American election.
I think the issue, though, also is that it's not like the Russian interference narrative that was about, like, how they're pushing these things on Facebook or whatever during the 2016 election. A lot of the Chinese Communist Party's interference comes at a higher and deeper level. So they've already kind of influenced, like, people who are, like, you know, at universities in the U.S., or they've influenced people who were diplomats or businessmen, or to kind of buy into the Chinese Communist Party's narrative about how we need to, you know, cooperate with China, we need closer business ties, like, all this stuff. And so when, as a media person, you're looking for, you know, people to sound off on China issues, you could be talking to a lot of people who've already bought into the Chinese Communist Party's narrative and you don't really even know it.
Right, yeah, especially because reporters, and I know because I spent so many years as a reporter, that you get assigned, like, all sorts of things that you know nothing about, and you have, like, 4 hours to research a topic before you go out and actually do a story and do interviews, and that's not enough time. to understand what's going on, not by a long shot. And I mean, this is kind of a problem with reporting in general, especially for television, where, like in newspapers, you typically get a beat, especially if you're more experienced. You can focus on one main topic. But as a TV reporter, like, you don't really have beats in the same way typically. And so you're spread really thin, and you're constantly jumping into topics you know not much about. And so with the China stuff, yeah, like, the, you know, some producer arranges, you know, a professor or something for you to interview, and you just kind of do it, and you don't know how to ask those tough questions. And then, you know, you just kind of broadcast whatever that narrative is that the professor has.
Yeah, I think that's one of the difficulties with talking about Taiwan, too. That, you know, when we came in, it's not like we knew a lot about domestic Taiwanese politics, necessarily, because our beat is China. And we're looking at how Taiwan and China...
And Taiwan is not China, as they keep saying here.
Yeah, so, like, there's a lot of these, like, traps you can fall into. Like, people got mad because during our first live, Chris said Chinese democracy, and people were like, no, it's Taiwanese democracy. I mean, we know that, but
I mean,
Chris,
it was kind of a troll that
Chris was joking about the CCP. But, like, you know, there's a lot of these things that, you know, I even saw a Washington Post story the other day that just completely misrepresented, like, the U.S. one China policy and made it seem like the U.S. agreed with the Chinese Communist Party. Like, it's just, like, all these little intricacies and complications that it can be hard to figure out when you're just coming into this.
Which is why people need to watch China Uncensored.
Yes, we actually did, are doing an episode.
Oh, yeah, on 10, well... That episode will have probably come out by the time this podcast is out. But yes, 10 common misconceptions about Taiwan or something like that.
10 things people get wrong about Taiwan. Of course, not you, our listeners, who are very, you know, keyed in, but you can take that video and share it with your friends who don't know as much as you do.
So guys, do you think we're going to come back to Taiwan anytime soon?
Oh, yes, undoubtedly.
I think so.
You don't sound so excited about that, Chris.
Well, I'm not, just because for us to come back implies that we have to have left.
Oh, okay. Well,
yeah,
what about...
I think after 10 days, like, we're all really tired, but, like, I
have
love
noticed that.
Taiwan. I would definitely, definitely come back here, and I think we'll be here back within, you know, this year or next year. At least, you know, I mean, Taiwan's great.
I mean, there's so much to look at in terms of how Taiwan is dealing with the Chinese Communist Party. And Taiwan and Hong Kong are really at the forefront of this.
Everything they do here, they do, are tactics they end up using in the United States. It's the front lines, yeah.
So there's definitely so much more to talk about. And we haven't even been to, you know, we've only really been to two cities in Taiwan, plus Jingmen.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
So, like,
that's what happens when you don't vacation in a place, you come to work.
So we should...
I know, this is our third trip here, and, like, we've never seen Alishan, we've never seen Sun Moon Lake.
I think
all
we need
places
to look into CCP interference in Sun Moon Lake.
Or CCP interference in tea plantations.
Yes. Oh, gosh. Alishan,
yeah, really,
High Mountain
We really
tea
need
farms.
To just plan. Like, we had no time off during these 10 days except for that, like, 3 hours that one night that we went out to eat. Like, honestly, we need to plan some time to just explore the beauty of Taiwan.
Yeah, I definitely want to go, you know, learn more about the Taiwanese Aboriginal tribes.
It actually sounds really interesting.
They were here first.
Yes, what many people don't realize is that Taiwan has not always been a province of China. It was, in fact, ruled by various native people who were here.
No, well, it barely ever was a province of China.
Yes.
That is one of the things that people get wrong about China.
Yeah. I think Taiwan.
Taiwan. Oh my God! Oh no!
Shelley.
Oh. We're losing it.
As an apology, I will go eat boba pizza.
Oh, gosh. You don't have to do that, Shelley. All right. Well, I think, yeah, we'll wrap up here. Again, we didn't have any tea this time with us on this trip from Path of Cha Tea. But if you want some good tea, go to go.pathofcha.com/unscripted, and you'll get some tea, and you'll be very happy, and you'll support the show. And yeah.
Don't they have a tea that's from Taiwan?
I think they do. Might.
We have had some. I forget which one it is, but they definitely do have Taiwan tea.
Yeah, I think they do. But in any event, yeah, big thank you to you guys for listening and watching all of our coverage of the Taiwan election. Yeah, I hope you learned something. And
we certainly did.
We certainly did. And the more you know.
Dun, 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 dun.
I hope we don't get a copyright infringement now. Thanks for listening. Once again, I'm Chris Chappell.
I'm Shelley John.
And I'm Matt Ganista.
Talk to you next time.